You know, I think we would have been willing to chalk it up to different worldviews, but that night they installed a speaker system and hooked it up to the orgy room.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 239 for the week of February 18th, 2019. I am automobile fodder David T. Cole, and I'm here with Darab Sugar Ninth, Sarah D. Bunting.
I agree to be here.
Pink Eye Patient Zero, Tara Ariano.
Is it noticeable?
And a touch of salmonella, Molly Lambert.
Hello.
You know, usually the guests have a little quip there, but she's so sick from the salmonella.
Nice. Welcome to Extra Hot Grate. Joining us for the very first time is a veteran podcaster, Molly Lambert. Hello, Molly.
Hi, Molly.
Hey, guys.
Yay! Here to discuss IFC's Documentary Now, which is returning for its third season. If you're recording, if you're listening to this episode the day it came out, it will be on tonight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Check your local listings. But helpfully, IFC also made the episode available in advance on YouTube. So if you don't get IFC for whatever reason or you can't find it, we will also have that embedded in our show notes. So the first episode is called Batshit Valley. It's described as their spoof, as all episodes of Documentary Now are spoofs of real documentaries. This one is inspired by Netflix's Wild Wild Country. So it's a story of a cult and sort of what went wrong. It's a two-parter, which normally those are their finales, but this year it's the premiere. Molly, how do you think Documentary Now did tackling Wild Wild Country and also The Source Family?
Sort of exactly note for note they did.
Yep. I thought so too.
Yeah. I was a little, sometimes I forgot which one I was watching.
Yeah, it was funny to me because I did watch Wild Wild Country and was fascinated by it the whole way through to see like the tiny changes that they made. So like, it's not salmonella this time, it is pink eye. You know, there's more to it than that, of course, but it still takes place in Oregon. There's still a spiritual leader. Sarah, you are, as a true crime podcaster, also had watched Wild Wild Country. What did you think of this take?
At first I was like, but this is so exactly the same that I don't, but then the little differences started to be apparent. And mm-hmm. what I historically like about Documentary Now is that they obviously love the format and the styles that they're satirizing so much that the exactitude of everything from like the score to the way that like film stock is aged to,
yep.
to look a certain way is extremely exact. They just have an excellent ear for this stuff. So even if this was just like, well, we're going to put Owen Wilson in a fake beard and just do kind of a shot for shot recreation, that would have been fine because mm-hmm. The understanding of it was so felt. And then there's the scene with the pumpkin carving set too, and it begins to diverge slightly and just be kind of its own thing, and then enter Batman, Special Agent Batman, Michael Keaton,
right.
And then they have Connie Chung saying the word butthole, and I was like, oh, here we are, and then Owen Wilson guru gets hit by a car. Yeah, it's just really, it's really good, and I think that also they have a really good ear for how much to like, how exactly to parrot it mm-hmm. so that you are located in what you're in the sort of source material. And then they know exactly when to diverge and do something else that's funny. So it's fascinating for me to watch because I just watch so many documentaries, especially in true crime. And it's like, yeah. And it's like, okay, how like, what exactly is the purpose of replicating this? But they really have such a good ear for it that it's always entertaining, even if what they're satirizing isn't necessarily something that I would care about. Their skill is amazing.
What they do on a technical level is amazing, but paired with actually mimicking properly the cadence and speed of a newscast delivery.
Thank you.
It is such a rare animal to see in pop culture for them to actually do that correctly and not screw it up in the service of what they want to say in the story, in the script. The chyrons aren't quite right, or newscaster gives too much expositional information that it would not be germane to the actual news item at hand. There's always something off about these kind of things in television, and this show gets it right. And when you pair that with their really good, you know, digital manipulation to age their film, their attention to screen jitter, all this sort of stuff, they got perfectly correct. And I just wanted to give kudos for actually also nailing the newscast part of it.
Yeah, that is one of my huge peeves in stuff like this as well. Like, the actors who are playing newscasters are always acting too much, like trying to give the characters like way too much personality, more so than news reporters actually have. Molly, what do you think? Are we at cult coverage saturation point? Is it impossible to satirize a cult at this point? Or did you feel that this was like a worthy entrant into the genre of cult spoofs and cult documenting?
It does feel a little bit like we are at peak cult, although just last night I was reading about a different thing that I had never heard of that was about a guru who was sort of like Osho, that culminated in an event called Millennium 73. Have you ever heard of this?
I think that's a store for young ladies to get clothes at last 3 months or so.
It culminated in this event in Texas, actually, that was like a big combination, like come see the guru and come to this music festival. And it was kind of a big flop. And a lot of people were disappointed because they were like,
I wonder what.
Right. I was like, while reading about it and thinking, oh, I would love to see a documentary about this. So I don't think I've fully exhausted my cults and communes thing.
Yeah.
I will say every time they showed Owen Wilson's face, I laughed. So
yeah. Yeah. He was really good.
Especially when he got pink eye.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not in their usual like company of players. Actually, I did notice this season overall, and we'll get into some of the other episodes, that I did miss Bill Hader. I'm sure he is busy with Barry, but he is not, spoiler, in any of the episodes this season, although he did write at least one that I noticed. So, you know, they're branching out with new people. And I also thought the actor who played their version of Ma Sheila was very funny.
She was great.
Yeah, she's from Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. I'm going to look up her name because I can't remember it. But yeah, she was really funny capturing that character. Who is such an indelible personage. Yeah.
Although, again, I was sort of like, this is so exactly replicating that, you know, sometimes I'm just like, wow, would this make any sense if you hadn't seen Wild Wild Country?
Well, let's ask Dave, because he didn't.
Yeah, I was able to follow Cult Bad and the political machinations inside the cult. It was fine. I'm sure I would have appreciated the craft of the script and some of the stuff they did if I've seen them, but I thoroughly enjoyed this. I'll tell you the moment where I was totally sold on it, and I'll play a little clip, a little background. There's like, the town is at war with a cult that has moved in, and one of the townspeople who owns a little grocery store puts up a sign mocking the cult's thing they do, where they ask vegetables permission to eat them. And this kind of leads to kind of a little bit of a civil war in town. And this is a clip where the cult puts in a fake obituary for the mayor of the town. And this is sort of like the end of it.
An obituary for the still very alive Mayor Marge Middleton.
There was no proof that Ra Sherir did it, but it was definitely in her voice.
Today, Marge Middleton lost her long battle with stupidity. She will not be remembered by her friends and family, as they are too stupid to do so. Services will be held wherever stupid people are buried.
That was kind of the moment where I this was in my column of Documentary Now documentaries that I actually find funny, as opposed to Documentary Now documentaries where I can appreciate their craft, but I don't really find them all that entertaining. It kind of, for me, Documentary Now can run a fine line between crafty and like poignant grunter territory sometimes. I forget if poignant grunter is our term or if we co-opted that from somebody. Do we need to explain?
I think I coined it.
Okay.
Tara, please,
poignant grunter, explain.
Oh, just someone who, like, when something happens, they, if you're in the theater watching a movie, they have to make sure that you hear them going, We were sitting next to a couple of olds when we went to see, what was it called? They Shall Not Grow Old, the Peter Jackson World War One documentary, and these two boomers were like making sure we knew they had a lot of opinions. Like, you're in your 60s, you weren't alive then, shut up. But anyway, that actress's name, apologies for my bad Iranian pronunciation, is Nekar Zadegan. She was great.
So there are episodes that fall into funny, and there are episodes that kind of fall into that other category. I think Batshit Valley was very funny. I think some of the other ones of the season, like Searching for Mr. Larson, which was their Bill Watterson send up, and Long Gone, were kind of like, you know, again, I appreciate the craft, but I didn't really find myself glued to the TV during some of these. For my money, if you're watching this season, Batshit Valley is very funny. I found Co-op pretty good too, which was their,
yeah.
Oh, that was so good.
What was it, Tara? Company is the,
yeah, it's based, yeah, on, it's inspired by original cast recording Company, right, which I had known. I've never seen it.
And then the last one, Any Given Saturday Afternoon, which is like a bowling documentary spoof from A League of Ordinary Gentlemen, starring one of the Detroiters, so, and Dexter. So that one was really good too. The other ones I just kind of found that I was like, you know, just kind of nodding my head, yes, I see what they've done there. But I really enjoy the ones that are funny. I'm not so hot on the ones that are just well crafted.
Molly, do you agree?
I mean, yeah, like, they're very well crafted, and I feel like I do the, what did you call it, like the emotional grunt,
the poignant grunting,
the,
yes,
poignant, mm-hmm, grunt, like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's a part of me that's like, oh, look, they exactly replicated the cinematography of this documentary, but not always laughing necessarily about that. Just kind of like,
yeah,
good job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are some that it was mostly the back half of this season that like, I did admire the craft, but it was like, then I sort of lost interest in it once I figured out what the craft was designed to imitate or pay homage to. Mm-hmm. But Co-op was so amazing, and mm-hmm, that's what I'm talking about both loving and sort of having like familial contempt for subject matter.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Renee Elise Goldsberry, what a good sport, like just making, yep, so many theater faces on, like, the camera is not, like, this will not be reflected in the recording, but just these, like, you know, big eyes, last row faces that, oh God, they were so, yeah, good. And it's always nice to see Urbaniak. I love that guy. He just looks snarky just sitting, mm-hmm, there.
Very pleased to see Richard Kind. He's one of my faves. His role
is so funny.
In this one is fantastic.
He's so good. And the songs are so perfect. They're like unbelievably brilliant in how not quite good, yep, they are. In that way, I just thought it was time. Great.
It's, yes, such, yeah, a hard thing. It's just that. I mean, I remember when I was charged at an advertising firm to recreate a bad late 90s website for our campaign. And you know what it should look like. But actually, to actually build it while you're a good designer, to build it shitty and make it look authentic is really hard. And while I'm at it, kudos to Marvel for kind of pulling it off with their Captain Marvel 90s website for that movie. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. And this, yeah, was sort of the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought Co-op was great. And for the reason that Sarah said, like, none of the performers are winking about it. Like, they're being those characters. They're being those actors, like, scooped up in the studio for 24 hours recording this album for a show that they find out while they're still there just closed. And Paula Pell as Elaine Stritch was so funny. I mean, it's just like top to bottom amazing. I did a little cocaine tonight. Hilarious. And yes. You can also go on YouTube and look up Late Night with Seth Meyers, because John Mulaney was on last week and he was talking about his process of how they wrote the songs for the episode, because he wrote that episode as well as starring in it as fake Sondheim. And so they played like a voice memo that he had sent to the songwriter of like a little bit of a snippet of an idea. And he's like covering his face while they play it because it's so embarrassing, but it's very endearing.
Oh, did we enjoy the send up of The Artist is Present with
I thought
Kate
it was
Blanchett?
Great. Yeah, that's the Kate Blanchett as Marina Abramovich. Molly, you saw a bit of that. What did you think?
I mean, again, sort of like so similar to the original that, yeah. You know. Part of me is just like I don't know that it like makes me laugh as so much as go like, huh, look at that. They really on the nose. Definitely a lot more celebrity cameos in this season also.
Yeah.
Because of the lack of Bill Hader.
Yep.
So it kind of depends on what episode you get, I think.
I did think Kate Blanchett let herself go in that one. I thought that was great. Drinking from milk and just screaming, I am human, or whatever that was. You know, she gave herself permission to be absolutely absurd. And it works in those moments, but it's not the funniest of the episodes for sure. It's one of those nodders, I think.
Yeah, it did go on a little bit long, but just the bullshittily, the bullshitty way they talk about the works. And it's like, the, you know, these could be profound works or it could just be bullshit. And right. Then wasn't one of the talking head interviews the guy from...
Exit Through the Gift Shop?
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, so you're in this like Moebius of like what's real and what's horseshit. But then at the end, like Kate Blanchett is having such a good time that you kind of have to... go with it. And like the line that smiling bucket is what it means to be a woman.
Yeah.
I had to pause it because I was like, that's ridiculous. That's a completely spot on as an impression of the original. And it kind of has this like truth to it as well.
I wrote that down as well.
So good. So good.
Yeah.
But yeah, the second half, with the exception of Tim Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
In the last one, and the fact that they used the verb to beef as a synonym for farting, my people, I was kind of like, it did sort of tail off at the end and was a little bit self-conscious, and like a little Armisen is plenty of Armisen for me.
Agree.
This was Armisen-y at the end in a way that I didn't necessarily need, but yeah, overall strong season.
Good season, definitely worth watching. And at other than the premiere, at about 20 minutes each, they do not overstay their welcome in general. So I even if they're not all hilarious, I always am glad that I've seen them, I would say.
Before we get on to Around the Dial, first, Tara and Sarah have a message.
We do. We have a message from Kate.
Two fun occasions are coming up for Kate and her husband, Ian, their 23rd wedding anniversary and Ian's birthday. And since they are, as Kate puts it, a geeky twosome in a thruple with TV, been there, they wanted us to be a part of their celebration.
Kate and, mostly, Ian wanted to take their love of television outside the house and together have painted a series of show-inspired designs on the paving stones in their garden. And last week we tweeted out Kate's video of the path because we've been challenged to a game and you can play along.
For each of the stones we can match to the show that inspired it, Kate and Ian are going to donate $5 to Donors Choose to support classroom projects submitted by teachers across the country. A cause very dear to my own heart, as longtime readers and listeners will recall, cough, tomato costume, cough.
Working together as a team, the three of us co-hosts were able to identify 12 of the 13 shows, but maybe you can best us. You can check out the video in the show notes and see whether you, unlike us, knew what number 3 represents. And by the way, this is not for them to multiply their gift. This is just for your fun and interest and appreciating what fellow TV fans did in their yard.
And Kate's main purpose was to honor how smart, supportive, funny, audacious, bawdy, witty, well-read, strong, patient, and ding-dang fun Ian is. So with that in mind, happy birthday, Ian.
Happy anniversary, Ian and Kate, and thank you for letting us
help you make a gift
make
to Donor Shoes.
To Donor Shoes. Synced up perfectly.
Oh, wow. Synctastrophe.
Domer's Choose.
Hey, why don't we sweeten the pot and throw in our ad fee into that donation? What do you say?
Love it.
All right.
We definitely will.
Fantastic. It's time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara. Tara, what have you been watching?
Well, Adam McKay, currently in the news because he directed Vice, which is up for Best Picture and other awards at the Oscars, has a new show coming to Amazon this Friday called The Giant Beast That Is the Global Economy. It's hosted by Cal Penn. And it's in this category of the misshapen children of Last Week Tonight, I would say. That also includes Patriot Act with Hasan Minhaj, the Samantha Bee show, Full Frontal on TBS. These shows where they try to do a deep dive on an issue, and it's never that the issue isn't worth diving deep on. It's that, is this the best format for whatever the topic is to be explored? And Last Week Tonight is a show I still watch. I think it's as good as far as it goes. It definitely has a lot of blind spots, which I won't go into for Pinko reasons. And The Giant Beast That Is the Global Economy.
Although she really wants to, people. She really
no,
wants
I don't. It's usually that they like get to a point and then they don't go as far as like, well, the issue with cash bail is capitalism. Like, they don't take that final step to like really
right.
identify whatever the main source problem is. Anyway, so this giant beast, the first episode, which is the only one of the screeners that we watched, is about money laundering. And Adam McKay, if you've seen The Big Short or the other guys, I think fancies himself like an amateur economist, which is fine. And these are issues that he wants to like delve into so that there's more oversight and more attention paid to white collar crimes, which is extremely laudable. Obviously, I have no problem with that.
Yes. As anyone who has seen Step Brothers knows.
Honestly, more Step Brothers, less Vice, like for real. But anyway,
I've been saying this a lot, that like there's no need for Vice because Step Brothers is already the best movie about the 2000s and the recession, you know? It's like a perfect movie about the 2000s.
I can't disagree. It's so true. Anyway, so this show is fine. Like, they give Cal Penn $1 million. They fly him to like various exotic locales and have him interview people about stuff like, how do you set up a dummy corporation in Cyprus? Like, how hard is it? What would I actually do if, you know, $1 million of dirty money came to me and I had to clean it? And some of it is, you know, interesting. The whole thing about like you can buy art and then sell it again is like, I think, probably the premise of this new show on Ovation called Riviera, but I only watched one because it was kind of boring. The problem is, is that all of these shows are hosted by actors or comedians. And so, you know, they're not journalists. So when they sit down and interview these people, like they're not actually trying to hold them to any kind of account or get them to give answers to difficult questions. Like, they're actors, so they're just trying to be charming.
Right.
So for example, when Cal Penn sits down with Felix Sater, who is, I believe, a convicted money launderer, and he like makes a joke about how now he has to drink his margaritas out of plastic cups because he stabbed a guy with a margarita glass. Cal Penn's reaction is to like literally throw his head back and laugh. And it's like, gross. I mean, also, yikes. Like,
yeah. If only there were lots and lots of out of work journalists to do these kinds of things.
God, exactly. So Dave's point was that it's too inflected also by like the Vice style of TV. Mm-hmm. Infotainment, which is also bad. But like, I think there's a reason that Last Week Tonight does not have John Oliver interviewing people in person very much. And that's why. It's because like that's not what he should be doing. And that's not going to actually shed any light on any of these topics because you're not a journalist and don't try to be. So my review of this is no. I mean, if you super love those other shows, you'll probably like this one, too. But I don't, and I didn't. So it was a shrug for me.
You got me excited about the idea of a Pinko Last Week Tonight, though.
Well, maybe someday we'll get it.
Yeah, that could be us.
Hey, let's talk offline. And for my plug, I'm going to mention Sarah and I were back on Dave Roth and Jeb Lund, both past guests, their Hallmark Movies podcast. Dave and Jeb Aren't Mean. Yes, there is a third Wedding March movie and a fourth, which we haven't gotten to yet. But this one was about the Wedding March 3. : Here Come the Bride. Here Comes the Bride, excuse me. Once again, with Josie Bassett and Jack Wagner and many other Canadian actors trying not to look cold in fake Vermont, actually Vancouver Island. So we'll link that in the show notes, but check that out.
All right, Molly, what have you been watching recently?
I have been watching so much Naked and Afraid because I just discovered it on real television when I was at home for the holidays, and I'd never seen it before. And then I found out it's been on for 10 years.
10 years?
That's crazy.
Earth years? That is crazy to me.
And the first thing I said when I watched it was like, I wonder how long the show was on before somebody died and they had to stop making it. And the answer is nobody has yet, I guess. Or my darker theory is that someone has and they just didn't air that episode and buried it. I love this show. It's like, it's always white people with tribal tattoos who think they'll be really good at survivalism. And then by like day three, it turns into a Werner Herzog movie where like nature destroys them. It's the best show. I love it.
What channel that even airs that? Discovery?
Well, I've been watching it on Hulu because they have just all the seasons. It's a great, find it very relaxing. Also makes you appreciate like having clothes and a blanket and food. So much.
I mean, I thought I appreciated all those things, but I could probably use a refresher.
You thought so, but then you see people who voluntarily chose to like go into the jungle and survive with nothing, and they're covered in bug bites, and they're like, I'm so unhappy. And you're like, ha ha ha, that's not me.
I love it. Do you have anything you want to plug? We'll make sure to plug your social media and your podcast, but please discuss.
Sure. I will plug Night Call, my podcast with Tess Lynch and Emily Yoshida. We just did an episode about Russian Doll last week, which you guys also did an episode about. Yep. And then I have another podcast called Molly's Sleazy Friends. That's just me interviewing people one-on-one. And we'll have an episode out soon about an exciting conspiracy theory about Clint Eastwood's The Mule.
Oh, ooh, shit. Awesome.
I'm in.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Speaking of conspiracy theories, sort of, I have been watching Sneaky Pete from the beginning. I started watching it like 2 years ago when the first season dropped on Amazon Prime. I meant to get back to it and I just didn't for whatever reason. The basic premise is that Giovanni Ribisi's con, Marius, gets paroled. He needs to hide from Bryan Cranston's crime boss, Vince, while he, Marius, is getting the money he owes Vince. And basically, he steals his Sally's identity and returns to the family the actual Pete Murphy has not seen in 2 decades, which is how he's able to get by with this and a question mark. The family has secrets of its own. They run a bail bonds business because, of course, they do. And the family is run by Margot Martindale's Audrey because God loves us and wants us to have good TV. Sneaky Pete is good TV. It's not great, but it is very winter Sunday bingeable. Our own Mark Blankenship wrote it up for previously.tv when it first premiered, and we will link to that fact sheet in the show notes. But one of his comments was that this show was originally supposed to be a CBS procedural, and that you could, once you know that, you could definitely see it for good or ill. There is definitely a similar, not super credible, but very energetic atmosphere in the show. Showrunning duties were taken over by Justified's Graham Yost after Amazon adopted the show. You have a bunch of Justified alums in the cast. The sort of Justified energy is also palpable. Here's the show's principal problem for me. Partway through season one, or most of the way through season one at this point. And it's two parts of the same problem. And one is that Yost sometimes tends to let his characters monologue because he has actors who can handle it, Martindale among them. But the writing doesn't always bear up under that. And two, Bryan Cranston is an executive producer. So when the dialogue gives Vince, seriously, we timed it, an 8-minute story that is neither necessary nor particularly flattering to Bryan Cranston on the accent side of things. That shit should have been chopped down. If those of you who know what came after that monologue will excuse the expression, it should have been chopped down to 45 seconds, but it isn't because Bryan Cranston, who is clearly enjoying himself, but the show is definitely at its strongest when it's in Connecticut with the Murphys or flashing back to Marius's pre-penitentiary cons, and not when it's letting Cranston be a talking villain all over the set for a third of an episode in the service of torturing a character that, like, the audience doesn't really care about, and we're not sure why the characters do either. Anyway, there are some frustrations with the show is what I'm trying to say, but rumor has it that season two features Ricky Jay, so may he rest. I am in, and I'm looking forward to getting caught up on Sneaky Pete by the time season three drops, which is later this year. I think actually Ricky Jay's passing may have screwed up their production schedule, so it's going to be a bit later than they thought, but that will be a good one to go with Bosch when Bosch is back.
Bosch Hive. Everybody loves Bosch.
I mean, it's a good show.
That's what I hear. You talked me into Sneaky Pete with, like, you know, Ricky Jay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really is, like, occasionally, like, my husband and I just look at each other and we're like, but, you know, once Cranston sort of starts turning the crank on one of these characters' monologues, it's like, all right, do you want some popcorn? No, thanks. I'm going to pee. And then you just, like, reconvene on the couch and he's winding up and you didn't miss anything. I love you, Bryan Cranston. This is not your fault, but they should have cut your monologuing down. For my plug.
Yeah. Nice long monologue. You can go. I like that. You go make popcorn.
Yeah. Which is sort of like why, like, we don't need this in the, you know, possible fast forwardable era, but okay. Like you're doing what you love to do, Bryan Cranston. And I'm doing what I love to do, which is to go get more Oreo thins. For my plug, I have a true crime podcast. Maybe you heard. It's called The Blotter Presents. This week, Kevin Smokler returns to talk about The Onion Field, both the book and the movie. And in a week or two, I will have an interview with the director of Abducted in Plain Sight.
Ugh, shit.
I frankly don't know where to begin.
Honestly.
Asking her, it's like dot, dot, dot. So what the fuck?
I watched this yesterday and like I read a lot of tweets and I was not prepared.
Yeah,
that's what everyone says. Everyone's like, I knew what it was about, but I wasn't prepared.
Nope.
Yeah, you're just not prepared for how much victim blaming you're about to start doing.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I shouldn't laugh. And like,
don't say anything else. Everyone should watch this. It's crazy.
Yes, indeed. And if you happen to be listening to this on the Wednesday morning that it drops, I still will not have done the interview. So email me, sarah@previously.tv, if you have questions for the director.
Love it.
And that's it.
We watched a show called Miracle Workers on TBS, starring Steve Buscemi as God.
Yep. What? That's a real show?
That's a real show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a spinoff of God? Is it God Friended Me in the God Friended Me averse?
Who said he friended me?
Unrelated. It's based on a book by Simon Rich, who is also a showrunner.
Okay.
So this is an idea that's been floating around in my head for a while. I think maybe I even like pitched this on the podcast at some point or explained it. Mm-hmm. So my sort of adjacent idea was that there is this company. And in this show, it's Heaven Inc. In my show, it was run by sort of a cigarette smoking man from the X-Files guy. And they determine everything that happens on Earth. And in my show, you know, it was basically The Office meets that character from X-Files. And this show, Steve Buscemi is God. And God is sort of just really lazy and not involved with humanity anymore. He runs a company called Heaven Incorporated that does everything for Earth, kind of, you know, behind the scenes in the way the angels have to do. Daniel Radcliffe is one of their miracle workers that sort of gets prayers that are answerable and just finds ways to make them happen, such as somebody can't find their gloves. So he sits there and, you know, presses the wind button to blow Snowflake off time, you know, off this glove. And then they find the glove. Yay. interesting premise. Execution was a little bland, I thought, for what they could have done. Tara, you also watched it. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. It was very blah. I mean, I had watched probably the first three or four episodes of Man Seeking Woman, which is Simon Rich's previous show with Jay Baruchel that was on FXX, probably. So when I found out it was him, I was like, oh, that kind of cancels out the coolness of Steve Buscemi in a weird wig being a, you know, laissez-faire god. But yeah, it's fine. I don't feel like I need to see more of it. The episode ends with this new eager angel who's working with Daniel Radcliffe's guy in the answered prayers department. Decides like, because God decides he's sick of Earth's shit and he's gonna blow it up and dissolve the company and everyone's gonna be laid off. And she said makes him a deal, a bet that if she can put this one couple together, he will call off his plans. So there are your stakes, but it's a limited series. There's only 8 episodes, although that's what they always say. So, you know, if you were like kind of charmed by the first one, there's not probably a ton to watch. It's on TBS Tuesday nights at 10:30, I think, Eastern time. But the sort of meta story that was occurring to me while I was watching it is like, it's interesting how these kind of fantasy shows, like The Good Place is another one, have this concept of like divine power as an office, like a workplace that's very boring and unsatisfying and uninspiring, but very stable. Someone should write a story about like what this means. To do a think piece about why this keeps coming up.
It's because everyone's fantasy is to have a stable job.
Well, of course, but yes, that this is the only place where this can, where we can even see this happen. Like, even the office isn't on anymore. Like, the only place we can conceive of being like a comfortable bureaucrat is in literally heaven. You know, so it's kind of a bummer way to end this, but show is fine. It was not great. Dave, would you agree?
It's definitely the tagline for this review. It is time for the canon. A little different this week. Excited to hear it and talk about it. Here we go.
The Great British Bake Off is a reality cooking competition wherein the only thing at stake is a cake stand. That is literally the only prize, other than a bouquet the size of a Shetland pony. No money changes hands, no internships are awarded. You are handed a cake stand that, I'm pretty sure, doesn't even have your name engraved on it. And despite this, it is one of the most nail-bitingly suspenseful television shows I have ever watched. Will your biscuit snap? Will Mary Berry declare your pastry to be scrummy? Will your bread move Paul Hollywood to give you a handshake that, I can only assume, reeks of aqua velva and pomposity? It's also completely charming. There's no backstabbing, no bad-mouthing. Everyone is supportive and encouraging, cheering one another on, and comforting each other when disaster strikes. It manages to be both comfortable and refreshing, a rarity on reality shows. Each episode follows the same structure. A signature bake that the bakers get to practice at home beforehand. A technical challenge that's a mystery right up until the bake starts. And finally, a showstopper. A long, intricate, hugely difficult take on that week's theme. It's tough to single out an episode as the best, but here we are. 6 points that I hope demonstrate why Series 6, or if you want to get all American about it, Season 3, Episode 10, the final, should be in the canon. Point number 1, the bakers themselves. Ian, Nadia, and Tamal are 3 of my favorite bakers across the entire series of The Great British Bake Off. They're all funny, humble, creative, and immensely knowledgeable. Tamal, who has great flavors but struggles with timing, can't quite believe he's here in clip 1.
I keep wanting to tell people, like strangers, I'm in the final! Yeah, me! Who are you?
Nadia, meanwhile, tends to suck at technical challenges, but is incredibly innovative when it comes to her bakes, and she gives herself a bit of a pep talk in clip 2.
Now I'm kind of battling myself a little bit, thinking, oh, but I really want to do well, but I really want to win. But I don't want to come second or third, I want to win. And it's just really weird. Come in feeling very strange this morning.
Ian, the engineer of the group, seemed to be the one to beat at the beginning of the season, and he's a tad overwhelmed in clip 3.
I wrote up in my journal, this could be a pivotal moment in my life this weekend. It's like, whoa, 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 that's too big, don't think about that. It's just another weekend in the tent, got 3 things to cook, what's there to worry about? quite a lot, actually, but never mind.
Point number two. The signature bake is truly signature, in that everybody is completely on brand. The bake is iced buns, a.k.a. Paul's very favorite thing. Ian comes up with two interesting flavors, but in what will become a running theme in this episode, he forgets the sugar in one of them, so they end up tasting funny. Tamal makes the apparently very strange decision to use royal icing on his, and while they taste good, he rushes his creme patissiere and can't use it. Nadia, meanwhile, breaks the mold, as well as Paul Hollywood's heart in clip four.
I'm doing one shape fingers, and then I'm doing the other one round.
Nice.
Round.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why shouldn't a bun be round?
That's fine.
Point number three. Mel and Sue behave themselves. I love Mel and Sue, truly. But sometimes they do a few too many bits. They do have a good one, however, at the start of the technical challenge in clip five.
It's one of Paul's recipes. Paul, any pearls of wisdom? No.
No.
Paul and Mary, your bungee jump awaits. Have a great time.
Mary, the safety harness is there. Paul, we haven't bothered for you. Very much a single trip.
Speaking of the technical, it's mille feuille, which, nope, not even once. It just looks like a terrible thing to have to bake. Paul explains that he picked it because all three bakers had trouble during pastry week, which Nadia immediately clocks in clip six.
Do you think we're being tested because we did bad pastry?
It's a possibility.
It's a personalized challenge just for us three.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
It is? I think it is.
Tamal doesn't grate the butter like he's supposed to and places last. Ian pipes badly and places second. Nadia's looks and tastes pretty good, so she's first. Point number four. The showstopper. Ordinarily, the result of the showstopper seems to dictate who's going to win that week's star baker, and it's obvious from the judging results who that's going to be most of the time, especially in the final. This time, however, all three bakers bring their A-game, so it's a little less clear. The bakers have to make a classic British cake with multiple tiers. Nadia is making a lemon wedding cake decorated with flowers and saris. Ian's making the biggest carrot cake of all time, and Tamal's making a sticky toffee pudding cake, the design of which I'll let him describe in clip seven.
The theme was meant to be something old. Like, there were these pictures in the press a few months ago about this Chinese fishing village that had been abandoned and had been sort of overtaken by all the undergrowth stuff, and I really liked that idea. So it was the spun sugar was meant to represent cobwebs.
So let me get this straight. Your classic British cake is based on an ancient, abandoned Chinese fishing village.
Yeah.
I love you. I love you.
Again, everyone is very much on brand. Ian makes the wrong amount of mixture for his first batch of cakes, forgets to add the oranges to his second, and leaves the cream cheese for his frosting in the fridge for too long. Seriously, dude, get it together. But still manages to turn out a carrot cake that Paul counts as among the best he's ever eaten. Tamal's sugar work is threatened by the weather, but he pulls it out anyway into something that is both bizonkers looking and oddly beautiful. And Mary loves it. Nadia is constantly shown tearing ass around the tent, but still finds time to make her own damn fondant out of marshmallows, and Paul's over the moon about her cake, while still, predictably, finding a way to be a dick. At the outside garden party, we get to check in with some of the past bakers, and we hear their predictions in clip eight.
I've got a favourite.
Nadia.
I'd like to see Tamal do it, I think. Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Do I actually have to say?
My money might be on Ian because he is very different.
Who's family in here?
No.
All right. I think Nadia will win.
The bake ends. Everyone finishes on time, though Ian cuts it really close. There's a group hug, and a sense of anticipation falls over the bakers in clip nine.
I feel emotional. Even Tamal, he was starting to crack at the end, and he's meant to be the strong one amongst us.
I just, there was kind of a lot riding on today for me.
I have tried so hard to get everything perfect. I had a tear in my eye as I walked out of the tent thinking I'm not going to ever do that again.
Yeah, I've been through a lot. Put a lot into this. Put a lot on this apron. A bit more to go on it yet. Yeah, no, I've kind of given it me all.
Everyone goes out to the party while Mary and Paul deliberate over the winner. And that winner is my point five in clip 10.
Of course, there can only be one single winner. And so, with real pleasure, the winner is... Nadia!
Really, I would have been happy for any of them, but Nadia made such a journey over the 10 weeks that it's super gratifying to see her win. Her joy is beautiful and infectious. There's a wonderful moment where Mary wipes away Nadia's tears of happiness, and an even more wonderful one where Nadia silently laugh cries while pointing to the cake stand and then to herself in jubilant disbelief. Which brings me to point 6, the biggest point of all, Nadia's speech in clip 11.
I am never ever going to put boundaries on myself ever again. I'm never going to say, I can't.
She's never been the winner before, has she?
She is now, though.
She is now.
Yeah. I am never ever going to put boundaries on myself ever again. I'm never going to say, I can't do it. I'm never going to say, maybe. I'm never going to say, I don't think I can. I can, and I will.
Chokes me up every time. It's so raw and honest and lovely. Even the usually stoic Mary Berry can't quite keep it together in clip 12.
Over the weeks, she's grown and grown and learned herself that she can do it. And when she came into the final today, she was nervous, but she had sort of look that I'm going to do it. And she did. Sheer perfection. And I enjoyed every minute.
It's a perfect end to a wonderful season. And I hope you'll award it Star Baker. I mean, induct it into the canon. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Erica, for this submission. Molly chose this off our list of user submissions. So, Molly, why don't you go first? What are your thoughts about this this episode going into our canon?
Oh, I mean, it was nice to watch it again. It is just a lovely episode, sort of a, you know, perfect episode of the British Bake Off to show somebody, to be like, this is a great show. It's very soothing and comforting and good people win. Again, this is maybe my idea of heaven is like the British Bake Off tent. You know, everyone's so gentle. When people lose, they never freak out. They're just like, oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they never cast like the bad boy of Bacon's here this season.
That's Paul.
No, everybody's so polite. That's what makes it so good. Everyone, it's so unlike a American reality show. Everybody's just like, oh, well, I must not be very good then. Going home.
Toodaloo. You know,
like, they're so self-effacing.
All right. Well, so this episode, but you think it's still a very special entry into the annals of a show that you have loved.
For sure. I mean, it's like I fell in love with the show like everybody else. It's an episode when Mary Berry was still on it. Mm-hmm. And I think Nadia's win was just very, like, very inspiring. I loved her. I was rooting for her. And people I'm rooting for never win on cooking shows, so.
All right, Sarah, why don't you go next?
This show, here's how in the tank we are in my house for this show, and specifically this season. My husband and I dressed as Mel and Sue for Halloween.
Yes. Yes,
my husband like happened to have the perfect Sue hair. At the time, there are pictures all on Instagram. I think I can dig them up. And then our friend Jillian got us. You're able to buy the ink drawings that they show between the bakes of the like the artist rendering of what the bakers are going to do. You could buy them from the artist. They're like, you know, signed originals. So our friend Jillian bought us the artwork of Nadia's soda. Her like pop creation.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's in our kitchen. Bunting was mentioned like weirdly a lot in this episode. Like, I mean, this episode is great. And sometimes if I can't sleep, I will put on old bake-offs that I've seen like a gazillion times before. I've probably seen this episode 5 times already.
Wow.
I still cried at the end. Like it's just really wonderful. The drama is in the baking and not like a bunch of Hell's Kitchen-y, Master Chef-y, interpersonal screaming and editing fakery. And here's another thing that I like about it. They just do what needs to be done. And there's not a lot of like faffing around. Like in the beginning, Sue's voiceover says, in the beginning, there were 12. Now there are 3. And then they just go into the opening credits. Like, thank you. We don't have to have like the Survivor style, like, you know, parade of torches or whatever the fuck they call it. It's just so elegantly, understatedly done. And it is, you know, I don't mind Prue. I don't mind Noel and Sandy. I think they're just fine. The show can endure with new personnel, but Mary Berry really, and her wonderful jackets really were an international treasure. And obviously Mel and Sue, I feel the same. And the openness of their emotion that is not cheesy is wonderful. I just think this is a great show. And while on balance to rewatch, I tend to prefer earlier in the season episodes because there's more going on and less, like sometimes they have these interstitial, like, let's go to the Spanish village where such and so pastry was invented. Like, fast forward. Don't care unless it's Spotted Dick so that I can laugh immaturely. But this is, I think, like it's a perfect example of what makes this show great. And it was a delight to revisit. Dave Cole.
I don't disagree with pretty much anything that Erica said. My problem is this show is so formulaic and their formula is really good. That's not a diss. That really, I think like every episode gets almost exactly the same grade. Like, you know, yeah. It's like, here's an 89, here's an 88, and here's your 90. I mean, it's, they don't deviate from a formula that works, which is great because it's a fine show. And I like what they're doing. I like that there's a show out there that is full of good people in a reality show where there's no prize and they help them. They help each other when, you know, they're putting falls on the floor and whatnot. But like, there's nothing in this episode that I couldn't get in any other episode, which makes it hard to like, then is this canon? Like, because the show is such an even keel, do we just say this is the one episode I'll put in the canon in acknowledgement of a reality show that went against the grain and succeeded? Or do we say this is a canon episode or this is not a canon episode because all Great British Bake Off episodes are alike? And really, like, all the arguments for this episode I agree with. I can make those arguments for pretty much any other episode beyond like a personal preference for, you know, the winner or a couple of the bakers. But I mean, they're all nice people. I know I wouldn't like really, except for one person in the season I had to watch every one of for the podcast, that she just like immediately went to tears each time. And I was like, all right, come on. Beyond her, I'd be happy for anybody to win. So mm-hmm. I think while Tara talks, I will ponder whether how I want this canon interpretation to fall.
Well, that's very helpful information because this is the first episode of Great British Bake Off I ever watched. In my life. I did edit this season's coverage by the aforementioned Mark Blankenship, and I listened to every episode of the Two Spotted Dicks on the Great British Bake Off podcast. So I'm familiar with, you know, how the show works. So, you know, none of this was like obvious, and I live in the world. Like, I know what the show is. I agree with Erica that the mille feuilles looked terrible. They did not look fun to watch. No. Even the buns looked like just messy. All of it looked really unpleasant. But
I feel like it often looks gross on the show, which doesn't take away from my enjoyment. A lot of my response to Great British Bake Off is like, wow, British pastries are disgusting.
I do remember that from editing visual aids from the show for sure. And this time, like, the candy striped whatever goes on top, I guess it was fondant. It just looked like plasticine. But unlike on Nailed It, when they show the model of what you're supposed to be making and you're like, no normal person could or would want to make this insane shark cake. Like, these, at least you get the sense of like, OK, it's hard, but like someone who is an amateur baker could figure out how to do it. So I appreciated that part of it in terms of like what they design. And I like that the showstopper was kind of open ended in terms of like, you know, there were some rubrics, the tiers and the whatever, but it was generally, you know, do you. And that was sort of fun to see what each of the, you know, what each of the contestants decided to pick to represent themselves. Although I disagree with Erica that Tamal's weird cake was oddly beautiful. It looked horrible. It didn't look like food. It looked disgusting. And all
to borrow a British phrase, that was a dog's breakfast.
Yeah. And when he described the flavors, it's like dates and fruitcake and it's like sticky toffee. Like, no, this is too much.
I love Tamal, but son, no.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
No.
Nothing goes together like wet dough and crunchy sugar bits.
Yeah. It was just so extra. And I could tell just from even only watching this one episode, like, obviously... He is a sweetie. They're all sweeties. Like, this is not against his creativity and, like, good for him for having an idea. But, like, wow, no. But the whole thing with the garden party is sweet. I didn't realize that, like, their families are there and get to taste the cakes. And, like, that was super cute. And all the past contestants coming back in a much less bitchy way than when it happens on Project Runway, the final show. And, you know, I cried when Nadia cried. And when Mary Berry wiped her tears, I was like, I lost it, you know.
Yeah,
so
that was adorable.
It was really sweet. And Mary Berry reminds me of my own actual grandma, who is also a fantastic baker. So... I had a lot of mixed emotions about this, but I'm leaning towards Dave's point that, like, if every episode is great, then how, like, what is it about this one that you veteran people that seem to be leaning yes would say really sets it apart? Because Erica's case, I have to say, did not 100% convince me, but perhaps you could.
I think the presence of Mary Berry and Mel and Sue means that it's peak Bake Off.
Okay.
Nadia, I think, was an extremely, like, more than usual beloved winner. Mm-hmm. This was a very solid, like, close final three. I don't think there's anything wrong with inducting a show or an episode into the canon that is an exemplar of other mostly just as good episodes, because some episodes of, like, early Bake Off, it's roof. Like,
right,
there's a lot of tails hanging off, so I don't know. I am not nearly as strict and, like, small c Catholic about the terms of the canon as Dave, which I don't think he's wrong. I just look at it differently, but I do think that this is outstanding television generally, and if Dave wants to slam the canon door closed behind it for this show,
sure,
that's fine, but I do think something from the show should go in, and I think this episode is a very good example.
Yeah, no, I enjoy the series quite a bit, but that was sort of my stickling point. Before we just move on to the vote, I did have actually a few random points I wanted to make. The outdoor kitchen had to be, like, the one evil thing that the producers decided on. Like, they were like, all right, this show's too good. We need one thing to sort of screw people up and add a sense of drama without actually being upfront and overt about it. And it had to be the outdoor baking kitchen, because there's, you know, like, I baked donuts when I was in high school. That was my high school job. And just, like, the differences outside in humidity and temperature would totally fuck up a bake. Never mind actually just baking with plastic walls outside in Britain.
Right.
Like, that is...
Yeah, forget it.
That is kind of evil. The way I described the sponge sugar gross nut date cake originally was, it really looked like if the dog from The Thing after it explodes was a cake. It kind of looks like that.
Yeah, with raisins.
There's some annihilation in that too, as well.
That's a more up-to-date reference for sure. And finally, this was Tara's observation, and I had to double check it later, but man, I don't know what legal problem they had bringing the title Great British Bake Off into the States, but the lengths they go to, including having to CGI on top of the original cake plate prize. If you watch it closely, you can see there's, like, a rotoscoped Great British Baking Show logo for PBS, and it doesn't quite move properly with the motion of the scene.
Oh,
so
my God. I was wondering what that was.
Yeah. And we're like, why not leave it? And it goes, well, it's got to be a legal issue. So, but that was funny to watch that. It really looked like 90s era, you know, special effects in the show. All right.
When you watch it on Netflix, to be clear.
Oh, yes. Thank you. All right. So for the purposes, and because I really hate when things get renamed and reseasoned, we are going to refer to this as the Great British Bake Off Series 6, Episode 10 Final. Let's put this to our final vote. Molly, what say you? Canon worthy or not?
I'm going, yeah.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
I hope we can cram jam this into the canon with our maths. It's a yes for me.
All right. There are shows that are an even keel that are sort of like shows I don't enjoy as much as this. I would really feel bad if I left this out of the canon just because it was consistently great, you know, piece of reality programming. So I'm not saying I'm going to do this all the time, but I think Sarah made a good case that for this, at least this once, that I will put Great British Bake Off into the canon. This will be its representative. Tara.
Woo. Woo. Well, as I said, it made me cry, so I can't vote against that. So yeah. I will also vote yay.
All right, that means... Whoops, nope. That means... Oh, God. The Great British Bake Off Series 6, Episode 10, Final, you are hereby inducted into the extra hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for winner and loser of the week. Sarah has our winner.
I do. It's a very meta week in Winnerville. with an honorable mention, the Tara Ariano is our winner because Aaron Sorkin quashed rumors of a revival of The Newsroom.
Thank God.
The real winner is me. And our esteemed colleague, John Ramos, because a Golden Girls cruise is setting sail in 2020. It's so soon.
Are you going to go?
I don't know.
Oh, I feel you should. As I said on Slack this morning, you should already be pitching yourself to go and cover its maiden voyage.
Well, if someone pays me to write about it, I will for sure go.
There you go. Is Betty White the only surviving Golden Girl, right?
Yes.
Right. Yes.
All right. So she's going to be smashing that champagne bottle on the side of that one, you know. So
she's got to live through this year first.
Sorry. Who's our loser of the week?
That took a turn.
I mean, karma for me, I guess. But
Gemma, go evil.
Thank you. Netflix showrunners, they canceled three shows yesterday. The Punisher, Jessica Jones, although in the latter case, there is a third season they already made that will, I mean, air, whatever you call it, stream. This year, and Friends from College, the mostly unloved average sitcom with a really strangely good cast, but kind of very average. There probably will be an afterlife for all of the Marvel shows because Disney has a streaming service coming and they may revive them in some form, but still it feels weird to.
Yeah, I know. I read that the TV departments and the movie departments don't really gel that well, and they're not really hopeful that any of these shows will see another life down the road.
Uh-huh.
The strategy for Marvel TV moving ahead on that Disney Plus thing is they're doing miniseries on various characters. Like there's a Loki show,
okay. Sure.
Limited show and stuff like that. So I think that's the way they're going. So I wouldn't be surprised if these shows are completely and utterly dead in the real world sense of it and not in the comic book world sense of it where they get revived 2 days later.
It is funny to me that these shows that like get peak TV levels of coverage, like outlets are recapping every episode and stuff, like all of these can't hold on at Netflix, and yet somehow Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is still on.
Yeah.
Like it has a new season coming. How?
Well, I don't know. Because the Netflix cancellations are political, right? They're not ratings based. I mean, these shows did really well for Netflix. I mean, I don't know about Iron Fist, but basically Disney started to say, you know, started making waves that they were going to start competing.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess.
I thought this was just Netflix realizing like, oh, we're making too much stuff and we got to like.
I don't think so.
Cut back.
I think it's sour grapes.
Then what about Friends with College?
It's little known as part of the extended Marvel universe. It's like they're in there with Squirrel Girl and all those guys, the West Coast Adventures. Yeah, it's part.
Right.
Yeah.
Season three, it was like, oh, they're all superheroes. That's why you've been following these boring people.
It's the slowest origin story ever, for sure.
You know what, though? I wish more origin stories would take place either very far before the person becomes a superhero or like in medias res, like they're already a superhero for a long time.
Yeah, careful what you wish for in the former, because that's Gotham.
Right. Mm. I I don't actually want any of these things, but
that's the right call.
for the people who like things like that.
We only need one superhero, and his name is Venom.
Hell yeah. Venom hosts the Oscars.
All right. Speaking about things that turn people angry, do you know what time it is?
Okay, Venom. Yay.
All right, everybody, this is the fifth game time of the season. To remind you, season score is currently Sarah 2, Tara 1, Value Guests 1. Today we are playing I Am Rubber and You're Glue from our good friend from France, Mademoiselle Caroline, who earns herself an extra credit topic of her choosing. Today's 24-question audio quiz will test your knowledge of TV insults and insulters. I will play you a clip of an insult or outburst, and you tell me the show for 1 point and the character for an additional point. I will provide no hints and let it be known that some audio has been redacted, characters' names and stuff like that, once in a while.
Sure.
I'm not going to say anything about France and insults, so let's move on. Steel meal situation, please, Tara.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting has 2 steel meals. I have 1.
Okay, value guess still with none, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so let's throw it to Picky to see who is going to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, Molly's going first, then we'll go to Tara and Sarah. Are we ready to play I'm Rubber and You're Glue?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
All right, Molly, I'm going to play you a clip. At the end of the clip, you tell me the show and... for an additional point, you tell me the character who is doing the insulting or the outbursting. Here we go.
We must beat them back or they're going to take this city. Your king's city.
Fuck the king's guard. Fuck the city. Fuck the king.
All right. Who's that angry guy?
Sounds like somebody from the show, a little show I do not watch called Game of Thrones.
I'm going to give you a point for that.
Hell nice. Yeah. I can recognize the bad dialogue.
Yep.
Thank you.
I don't know who it was. I'm going to go Tyrion.
That's a good guess. I think we did hear him, but he's not the one we're looking for. We wanted the Hound.
If you knew how much I don't know about this show, it is amazing that I even got this far.
I appreciate that. I have a lot of troubles with names on Game of Thrones, and I watched the show. I'm going to give you 3 Dave points.
Hey!
You're deemable for absolutely nothing right now, but someday down the line, people will thank you for it. To Tara.
Yes, sir.
Go and stand in that fucking corner. Stand over there, right? And do not move, or I will perform a fucking living fucking autopsy on you with a fucking rusty spade, and I'll have your kidneys for fucking cuffing.
Oh, my heart. That's the thick of it. And the character is Malcolm Tucker.
That is good for 2 points. To Sarah D. Bunting.
Go fork yourself, you mean giraffe.
You mean giraffe. That is The Good Place, Eleanor Shellstrop.
That is correct for 2 points. Okay, back to Molly.
You're like the League of Nations in 36, just hoping the Abyssinian crisis resolves itself.
That's the lesson you draw from the fall of Addis Ababa? You sound so naive.
And you sound just like Victor Emmanuel III.
What's that show? Who's that character, Molly?
Is that Frasier?
Mm.
Oh.
It is not. So you're probably not going to get the character.
Definitely not.
All right, that was Captain Holt from Brooklyn Nine-Nine arguing.
Do you
with
see how I could have confused it for it, Frasier?
As soon as you said it, I'm like, that timber.
That, yep, yeah. It's very Frasierian.
Yes. It's very Frasierian.
And we ought to know, we're Frasierian.
Yeah, to bring up an arcane war seems very Frasierian.
Yep.
Tutar.
He swallowed a magnet. We got to cut it out. How old are you?
8.
And he swallowed something stuck to a fridge. Darwin says let him die.
That's House of House.
House of House.
House of House House.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Why are you the way that you are? Honestly, every time I try to do something fun or exciting, you make it not that way. I hate so much about the things that you choose to be.
Is that The Office?
Is it? Yes.
I don't know. Okay, then is that Michael Scott, please?
You are correct, and you have 2 points. Well done. All right, Molly, here we go.
What was that?
It's called the medium sketch.
The medium sketch?
Yeah, it wasn't rare, and it certainly wasn't well done.
All right. Muppet Show? Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. 2 points.
Gorgeous. Well done.
The original podcaster.
Yes. True. Boy, do they have a... Man, why don't they have a podcast? They should,
they
right?
They should. Man, they should.
They probably do, and we just, like, we're out of it.
Tara, dude, it's this. It's this, you guys.
Yeah.
It's like a kind of torture.
I have to listen to it. That's not great. Tara, this clip, the audio is not so great. So if you want to hear it twice, I will certainly oblige.
Okay.
We must be so intelligent that he does not suspect us of being intelligent at all.
Absolutely.
And there, you would be invaluable, mon ami.
I don't think hearing it again is going to help. I do not know what that is.
No clue?
No.
That is Perrault from Agatha Christie's Perrault. Being
sure
French bitch. All right, here we go.
Belgian.
This is for, who is this for?
Me,
Sarah DeBendick.
Yes, thank you.
I'm going to need some answers and fast. Otherwise, you and I are going to turn on the hot lights, do the Lindsay hop, and see who cracks first.
Now you're trying to seduce me.
I never thought I would make this sound in my lifetime, but who?
I think this is going to be tough for anybody on this panel. I don't think anybody watches this show. Certainly have talked about it on the podcast before, though.
Can I hear the clip again, please?
Sure can.
I'm going to need some answers and fast. Otherwise, you and I are going to turn on the hot lights, do the Lindsay hop, and see who cracks first.
Now you're trying to seduce me.
I never thought I would make this sound in my lifetime, but who?
Oh, my God. I'm going to be so... Yeah, that's annoying me also. And it's annoying me that I know that actor's voice, but I don't have enough time to come up with a guess. So, Benson of Benson.
That's Lassiter on Psych. Lassiter on Psych.
Okay.
Were you circling around that at all in your brain?
No.
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 Okay. Don't have to feel bad. Back to Molly.
I'm ashamed God made me a man.
I don't think God's doing a lot of bragging about it either.
Carla on Cheers?
Carla on Cheers, 2 points.
Yeah, wow.
All right.
This is fun.
To Tara.
Yes.
Oh, tell me you're wearing that cheap, tacky dress to meet your oldest friend? I would be caught dead in that dress.
You'd have to be dead 6 months to fit into it.
Oh, can you play it again?
Oh, tell me you're wearing that cheap, tacky dress to meet your oldest friend? I would be caught dead in that dress.
You'd have to be dead 6 months to fit into it.
Is that The Nanny?
Oh! Wow.
Okay.
Nice.
It's the butler, but I don't know his name. I don't know his name.
You are correct. It is a butler. The butler's name is Niles. Niles on The Nanny.
The other Niles.
He pulled 1 point. That's pretty fucking impressive for that clip.
That was amazing. Well done.
Thank you.
Sarah D. Bunting. Last question before our score break.
And Ray, if you come in here again dressed like a maths teacher, I will paint your balls the color of hazelnuts and inform a bag of squirrels that winter's coming.
This is another tough one.
Yeah. Shit.
Let me play that clip for you again.
Yeah, if you don't mind.
And Ray, if you come in here again dressed like a maths teacher, I will paint your balls the color of hazelnuts and inform a bag of squirrels that winter's coming.
Any guess?
The Ruddles? I don't know.
Yeah, that was a tough one. That was Gene from Life on Mars. I think you needed to watch it to get it. That wasn't going to be a yeah. pop culture osmosis answer for sure. All right, back to Molly. Oh, wait, score break. Let's hear the scores, please. Tara Ariano.
Very close game. Molly and I are tied with 5 points each. Sarah has 4.
Ooh, all right. Back to the game. This one's for Molly.
Don't worry about them. Don't worry about what? Like Lucifer didn't worry? Or Michael? Or Lilith? Or Alistair? Or Azazel didn't worry? Am I the only game piece on the board who doesn't underestimate those denim rap nightmares?
Oh, God, I have no idea what that is.
Anybody? No?
I'm not going to steel meal it, but is it American Gods?
No, it's not. That's a fine guess. It is definitely...
That was going to be my guess.
Oh, you should have guessed. Would say no, Supernatural. No penalty for guessing, but that was Crawley on Supernatural.
Sarah, I thought so.
You got to remember who wrote this game.
You're right.
Caroline.
Yeah, know your author. All right, to Tara Ariana.
In response to the bestiality rumors circulating about you, I've decided to forego calling you by the usual girl's name, and instead I'm going to be referring to you by whatever famous dog I can think of. I've gone with Lassie because, of course, that satisfies the criteria of being both a girl and a dog's name, thus helping you ease into the transition.
That is Dr. Cox on Scrubs.
Correct. All right. To Sarah D. Bunting.
This birthday thing kind of has me depressed as well. You think you could help me, too?
Sure. No matter how bad things get, remember these sage words. You're old, you're sad, get over it. So what if you knew Jesus personally? Wake up and smell the coffee, you fossil.
My mistake. I thought since you looked like Yoda, you were also wise.
All right, giving and taking. So you got two possible answers for the character. What's the show? And I think you know both, but here we go.
Yes. Speaking of the devils, that's the Golden Girls, Blanche and Sophia.
Correct. 2 points. Picky shines on you. Back to Molly. Everybody's got 3 questions left.
Hey, what's next on your fascinating list of talking points?
What's your major?
Seriously? You've got 1 minute to make an impression, and that's all you can come up with? You want to know my sign, too, Jack? Or how about my favorite color? Or if I'm a Britney or a Christina? Here, I'll ask you a question. Was the last time you had an interesting thought when you considered flinging yourself off a building? Bye, Jack.
Man, I don't know. Dawson's Creek? That's my guess.
That's Sierra. A decent guess. It's contemporary, kind of a bit. Anybody?
That's Gilmore Girls.
Gilmore, yeah, that was Paris from Gilmore Girls.
I could feel the WB.
Yes.
Yep.
Your instincts were correct. Tutar area.
I could feel the Michigan J Frog.
Tragedy happened in your life that you insist upon punishing yourself with all this mediocrity.
What, because I'm eating a turkey sub?
Your turkey sub, your clothes, the fact that a woman of your resources and position lives like some boxcar hobo, or maybe it's the fact that while I'm saying all this, you have a piece of lettuce stuck in your hair.
Oh, that is 30 Rock, Jack Donaghy.
Correct. All right, Sarah D. Bunting, are you ready?
I don't know.
The eyes are open, the mouth moves, but Mr. Brain has long since departed.
Can I hear it again?
The eyes are open, the mouth moves, but Mr. Brain has long since departed.
Sweet and Vicious? I don't know.
Sweet and Vicious? No, sorry, wrong button. Oh, that was bad on me. Incorrect. That was Tari, but you know it.
Yeah, that's Blackadder.
Blackadder, correct. Okay, everybody's got 2 left, starting with Molly.
Thank you, thank you. That thing was going to kill me.
Well, what do you expect? Out alone in this neighborhood, I got half a mind to kill you myself, you half-wit.
What?
I mean, honestly, what kind of retard wears heels like that in a dark alley? Take 2 steps, break your bloody ankle.
I was just trying to get home.
Well, get a cab, you moron.
And on the way, if a stranger offers you candy, don't get in the van.
All right, so two good clues there. We got that accent, but we also have a position on the timeline where people would say retard on TV. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I know what that is. Something British.
Something British.
Something British.
Somebody British on the show, but not something from Britain. That was Spike on Angel. Spike on Angel.
Wow, Spike said that on Angel?
Yeah.
That is surprising.
Yeah. Different time, way back a few years ago.
I feel like we also already knew that was bad then.
Maybe.
Probably.
But Spike was bad.
Yeah, he's a bad boy.
You're finished. You've lost everything. And I now own this house.
This house? Are you insane?
Oh, no. I'm perfectly sane. So take this junk and your blonde tramp and get out of my home.
Dynasty?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Okay, well, that's probably Alexis Carrington.
You are correct. Nice pull. 2 points to Sarah D. Bunting.
Listen, as much as I'd love to stay here sweating with the oldies, I'm getting a little woozy from the boozy seeping from your enlarged pores.
Oh, honey, they're not enlarged. They're just in shock over that hair color.
Will and Grace, and that is Karen.
Karen, correct. 2 points. Okay, everybody has one question left, so let's get the scores here near the end.
Okay, Molly has 5, Sarah has 8, I have 11.
Okay, here we go. Everybody's last question coming at you, starting with Molly. Here you go.
Okay, your basic spells are usually only about 50-50.
Oh, yeah? Well, so's your face.
Spells? I'm going charmed, I guess?
So close.
Dawson's Creek?
No, further away now. That was Willow from Buffy.
Oh, again. Buffy. Yeah. Close, but
you're getting
not...
You're all getting all the Whedon shows, unfortunately. That's picky for you.
Yeah.
To Tara, your last clip here.
You prank call Mandy?
What if I did?
Well, I want to congratulate you. Shake your hand. Congratulations. You've been named the world's biggest cockroach. This award is given in recognition of your unparalleled lack of decency and humanity. Bravo. You're going to die friendless and alone.
I don't know. I got nothing.
Steel meal.
Steel meal.
That's Veronica Mars on Veronica Mars.
Both points stolen. That makes it very interesting. That puts you within 1 point, correct?
That's correct.
All right, here's the last question. 1 point to tie, 2 points for the late game steal. Very interesting. Here we go. Here's your flip, Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. You've never been employee of the month, have you?
That's right. But if I were you, I wouldn't be going out on any limbs.
Do you like to hear that clip again? This very important endgame clip?
I would like to hear that clip again, if I may.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. You've never been employee of the month, have you?
That's right. But if I were you, I wouldn't be going out on any limbs.
Is it Married with Children?
Is it? It is.
Yeah.
Character name for the win.
Is that Mr. L. Bundy?
You are correct.
Sarah!
Once again, Sarah D. Bunting with the late game victory. Well done. And that's how you use your steel meals, folks.
Thank you, Mr. L. Bundy. Said no one.
All right, everybody. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Crate. We joined Documentary Now for the third season of Everlasting Bliss before traveling the astral plane of the dial with stops at the giant beast that is the global economy, Naked and Afraid, Sneaky Pete's, and Miracle Workers. The proofing was in the pudding for Erica's canon recipe for Great British Bake Off. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's insulting Game Time. Remember.
Well,
listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
beware of soggy bottoms,
Sarah D. Bunting,
somebody beefed over here,
and Molly Lambert.
Make your buns be good.
Nailed it.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right Yay. Here on Extra Hot Grid.
Here in our co-op.
Whose package is this? Something from overnight insulin emergency providers? Going once? Twice? Nope. Okay, garbage time. Bye-bye.